Hello and welcome back to the Third Period Podcast, where we take a look at the UK's ice hockey leagues. We're sponsored by Willie's Ice Hockey Emporium for all your ice hockey needs. Check them out. Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Third Period Podcast. Tonight I have Ash with me. Ash, how are you?
Very good, thank you, Danny.
Fantastic. Ross, how are you?
Yeah, fine and dandy, thanks.
Fantastic. And Scott, we have you with us as well. How are you?
Yeah, bored of this lockdown, but you know, looking forward to tonight's guest.
Should be a good one, definitely. So, without further ado, tonight's guest played for the South Carolina Stingrays in the ECHL before moving over to British Shores in 2002, where he signed for the Coventry Blaze. Spent three seasons and then moved on to play 4 years in Sheffield, a season in Aalborg before returning back to Canada to play for the Lloydminster Border Kings. He was also part of our 2004-2005 Grand Slam winning team. We welcome our fourth netminder for Netminder Month, Jody Lehman. Jody, thank you for joining us.
Hey guys, good to be with you. Took a little bit of had a couple meetings come up here, but sorry to keep you waiting. So I'm pretty excited to do a little chit chatting and reminiscing. It's been a while. So.
No, it definitely should be a good one. We're going to mix it up a bit, Joe. Normally we ask the cliche questions first, but I'm not going to. Why a netminder? Seems like an unusual position to go for.
I was a terrible skater, so my parents put me in the goal, right? That's what they do. So, you know what? I played out till I was 8 years old. I had that infatuation in street hockey, grass hockey that I played. I always wanted to play goal. So it just kind of stuck with me. And I just watching guys like, I think it was Pelly Lindbergh and especially Patrick Waugh. I was kind of idolized, and that's kind of what I wanted to do. And I started playing goal at 8, and that was. So
your junior career started quite early, WHL, with the Moose Jaw Warriors, year on year, getting more and more experience. What was it like playing in the WHL?
Well, you know, it was fun. I was one of in the first year the Bantam draft ever came, I got drafted, I think, second overall in the second round. And I was pretty excited. That was, that was kind of set in stone. I wanted to play in the Western Hockey League. And fortunately, I was able to leave home at 15 years old and go play midget for a year and a half and then started my Western Hockey League career in Moose Jaw. So, you know, it's everything you ever kind of dream of, right? Like playing in the Western League. And I remember as a, you know, a 12, 13 year old kid going to watch the Saskatoon Blades and watching guys like, what was this for? Robbins. And he played in England or London, I believe, and Belfast. And all these guys I used to watch and idolize. And, yeah, it was nice to just make that step and make the Western League. And, you know, you're proud at, you know, when you're 16, 17, and you're playing the Western League, you're a pretty, pretty proud kid. Maybe a little cocky at times, which everybody kind of has to grow up from and remember where they're from a little bit. So, but it was pretty exciting, pretty fortunate.
So you've had your junior career, say, and then you move on to the pro hockey career. A couple of games in the CHL in 97, 98, and a playoff run. And then you started a four-year stint in the East Coast Hockey League with the South Carolina Stingrays, winning the Kelly Cup in that third season. Was that the pinnacle of your East Coast hockey career?
To some regard. I think it was a different stage in my career, but it was a stage in my career when I, you know, I went through, you know, in hockey, you know, I wouldn't say I was that serious when I played in the East Coast League. I went out and had fun. I partied and was just living the life, really. I didn't know any different. I was so happy to be there. I remember, guys, this all stemmed from I went to university for 2 years for the U of S Huskies. And I hated every minute of going to university. And I did it for 2 years. And I, you know, we won the league and lost in the national semifinals. And I just, it was like a hole in my heart. I wanted to play pro. And I went to Wichita, and everybody forgets, I went to Wichita and I played two league games. And then I started in the playoffs and we lost in the finals, four straight to a much better club, Columbus. But it was like the, it was my taste. It was just like it unleashed me. That's all I wanted to do is play pro. And I wanted to, you know, play in front of these fans. And I always wanted to show that I could do it. And I did it. And that's what started me. The Wichita experience in the playoffs was just like, it kind of opened my eyes. And then what I wanted to do. And I wanted to be a minor league pro hockey player. And I was happy with that, right? And, you know, that led me to go get to South Carolina with some, with a great, great organization. And, you know, what I, when I, in South Carolina, I loved the city, the lifestyle so much that it actually helped me endure to be the player I was in South Carolina in some regard. And, you know, with my stints in Rochester, I wasn't ready for the American Hockey League when I was playing in the East Coast League. You know, I was sitting there, I was in South Carolina, we'd go play and we were winning, go golfing. And, you know, I wasn't serious at that point in my career. So I wasn't serious enough to play at the next level is what I was trying to say. Really. So, but everything I had done in South Carolina, I was lucky because I was able to play off talent. And, you know, it's a little bit different than when I went to England. I kind of put it together a little bit more. But the experiences I had in South Carolina was, you know, it was more life experiences that really, where I'm at today, it kind of makes you realize, okay, I'm good, I got talent, but for me to take it to the next level, I moved on and went to England, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, definitely, that's what I was going to push on towards. You had your game in the AHL. You were quite a solid East Coast netminder by the sounds of it, and you had a good experience there. What made you make the jump to come across the UK?
You know what? I needed a change. I was partying a lot. I was drinking, and I'm not even scared to say, like, I lived a good life. Everybody asked me, so what would you do different if you went back? And I'm like, I wouldn't do a freaking thing. I wouldn't change it for the world. I'd do it all over again, and I'd probably do it over again after that, because what I did there, how I won the championship there, I was a part of it, and how I played, I was able to do it the way I live my lifestyle down there, and it was awesome. I met some great people that I still talk to down there, and I still go down there, but it was time for a change. I wanted to get something. I wanted to get a little bit more out of my career, and that's why I came to Coventry. And the best opportunity, I talked to London at the time, and Paul convinced me to come, and had a good relationship with him right off the bat. And I need a change. And I just kind of got a little bit serious is what I did. And I got serious and came over that first year. And remember, my first year, I was okay there. My numbers were okay for a first place team. They should have maybe been better during the season. But it was part of my growing and understanding what it took, really. So it was kind of that first year was a good kind of eye opener. And I think I woke up the last half of the season, the last part, kind of woke up and figured it out a little bit.
So like you said, you finished overseas in South Carolina, and then you came to the UK and signed for Coventry. What was your first thoughts of when you signed for Coventry? What did you think of the city itself and the Sky Dome?
Well, you know what? I came with an open mind, and I gave a university a shot there as well so I was going to school too. And it's a different lifestyle, right? It's a complete difference. So I'm pretty open to stuff. And I had my golf course, the Forest of Arden. I'd get away and go golfing with some guys, and, you know, I'd go have a couple beers here and there with the guys, and it was just a different mentality of things. And I was fortunate to see that last part of the old school Coventry, right? And the old dressing room, the old kind of FD&L. And it was nice because as I grew as a player that first year, I think the league and the hockey grew as well. I mean, it was always there, but I think the elite league kind of just grew into another level. So it was good to be a part of it. And I think my game kind of stepped up every year as the leagues got better. And, but it was a good, I liked it because it was, obviously I come from South Carolina. We had a big, beautiful new building and in the palm trees and stuff like that. So it was an eye opener, but I never regretted leaving at all either. I was ready for that step.
So I'll take it. Obviously we won the league that season. We also won the playoffs and we come runners up in the Finders Cup. You also got Net Minder of the Year and Player of the Year for the Blaze. What a feeling that must have been for your first season in Coventry.
Yeah, no, it was good. I was surprised at my peers, what they thought of me, but maybe, you know, I don't know. You can't look at me as that I put the team over the edge. They brought some guys like Carpenter in and Joel Poirier and that put, I think it was the right mix of guys coming in. Not the best players coming in, but the right mix of guys coming in. And if you have the right mix, sometimes that trumps a couple of the best players that you just want to go out and get the best players. I think you got to get the right guys. That's more important than the best guys all the time. So I think that's, I mean, like I said, I didn't think during my regular season I was at my best, but I think I got better as the year went on. And then I just kind of capped it off in the playoffs. So, it was pretty good. It was with what the peers said, but I knew I had a little in the tank. But anyways, that's kind of, it was good to see the peers that did. I was quite surprised because I was good because I knew I had a little bit more to offer like in the next few years. But I think, and that kind of set the tone for that for the few years after that. So.
I mean, you played 36 games. You got 1.92 goals against and 913 save percentage. You know, that's pretty impressive for your first season.
But I didn't like the 913 save percentage. I should have had a better one, but that's the way it goes. I didn't see a lot of rubber, so you can't pad that stat at that.
So the one last question for me for the moment is when we went in Dundee, how liberated did you get?
Yeah, that was huge because you remember when we were in Newcastle or where did we play the Findus Cup and we got just beat, we got the shit beat out of us there pretty good there in the final. Findus, what was it, the Findus Cup final or whatever? Or no, what did they call that cup and we lost to Newcastle?
Findus Cup, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, so that was, and we basically didn't even show up that game, right? We lost 3-0 or something. Something like that anyway. So, you know, it was a good relief. Like we had the best team all year, really. Was anybody even close to us? Not really. No. We were solid. Like, I don't think nobody was going to stop us that year. So it was nice to put a cap on it because I give Tomo credit. Like Tomo, his coaching style then was just, it was unstoppable, I think. For those years in Coventry. And I give Tom a lot of credit because he taught me a lot about the game with his coaching and his defense, a lot of New Jersey kind of aggressive trap. And so, like I said, I had this stubby little English guy pick me up at the airport and it was Paul Thompson, my coach. And that son of a bitch, he was a pretty smart guy when it came to the hockey game. So a lot of credit to him. I Paul's a great friend and a great person.
Fantastic. Stubby little English guy. That's going to stick with me. So, obviously, you've got your first season completed then, Jody. We have the transition then to the Elite League, which you've kind of mentioned. You were happy with that. Your game was transitioning as well. You felt like you were part of the kind of leagues getting better. Did you notice in that first season of Elite League, the standard of hockey being much different? Because obviously you had the powerhouses like Sheffield, Belfast and Nottingham, and then you had obviously the top end teams from the BNL like Coventry, Cardiff joining. Would you say the standard was better, or could you handle it?
Yeah, no, the standard was good. You remember I played against all these guys in the East Coast League and American League, so I've seen them all. I played them all in junior, right? It's just that maybe I took the different path there to get to those leagues. And, you know, I didn't play a whole bunch of games in the American League where some of these guys did, you know, but a lot of these guys I played with. So it was just a matter of getting there and playing. And you know, everybody talks about that second year, about the year, and they just maybe underachieved. I mean, I think we were as good as we could have been that year. And personally, I was happy with my game because our team was not very good. And I was happy with my game. And I felt I competed. My stats maybe didn't show that, but I was okay with the game. And I know, you know, Tomo and them were a little concerned coming into signing me for the third year, but the second year kind of, I was pretty confident that where I was at really. So me getting into that was, it didn't hurt me any. It almost prepared me for that third year, really.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of fans will say the second year was a bit of an unusual one, but you're jumping up a league and you got standards of plays a little bit better with the powerhouses that there are. And I think we finished third or fourth that year.
I think we had like an FBNL team, really. We brought that team up, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So I think Tomo got the most out of our guys. Like, let's be honest here. I mean, you know, we got the most out of what we had, I thought. So I thought we were okay. Everybody was all mad because we didn't win a cup, but I thought we got as much as we could have got out of that year. So, and for what we had, really. So we didn't have any big signing guys and stuff like that, like other teams. So I think we got the most out of that year, and people kind of forget that.
No, yeah, definitely. And I don't think it's a bad year when it's your first year in the top flight. One standout moment from that season, though, and it's a question that we've always been dying to ask since it happened. Basingstoke Bison visit the Sky Dome one night and they pull their netminder with a couple of minutes to go. Puck comes deep in the corner. You decide you're going to have a bit of a wonder, pick it up, and you decide to flip it down the ice and just misses your next season's teammate in Doug Schuler and goes into the net. Was that something you always wanted to do, or was it just a spur of the moment thing?
Well, no, I've been trying that since freaking junior, basically. So I hit the post a couple times in South Carolina, and finally there I scored. But the good thing about that, I won 1,300 pound when it came down to it for scoring that goal. People forget about that. There was a guy, I don't know who it was, he put a bet on me. And four of us put 50 quid, 25 quid in each, I think 100. And it was 50 to 1 odds. And he put the bet down with Ladbrokers, and we all won 1,300 bucks, 1,300 pound each.
Wow.
Not many guys know about that. And that's not on YouTube, that video. I got a whole bunch of those DVDs. I'm pretty excited about that. Still, I watch it. So
we've managed to trace the video out of, I don't know whose phone, but we've got it off someone's phone. And,
really?
Have it in our, yeah, we have a WhatsApp chat, and we've shared it between ourselves. So,
well, I could send you guys a video of it. I don't like put stuff on YouTube and stuff, but I don't like putting my own achievements and stuff on there. But I got a good copies that I can send you guys.
I'm sure we'll keep an eye out for that, and we'll pest you at a later date for that one.
Yeah. You betcha. So yeah, I'm pretty excited. That was what I dreamed of. I watched Hextall, Martin Brodeur, and there was no reason why I couldn't do it the way I played the puck. And sometimes you just got to be patient and wait for the right time. But the kid who he dumped the puck right in on me twice. And the first time I went to shoot it and I hit my roommate in the ass or in the leg. What was his name? Defenseman from Boston.
Steve O'Brien?
Yeah, Steve O'Brien. Good guy. And then I was like, oh, shit. And then like 30 seconds later, the guy put it back right on me. So it was like he was giving me a free chance or something. So thanks to him. And that, what was his name from Basingstoke here? Reed, Matt Reed.
You ring the bell, yeah. What it
yeah. So Chartrand always bugged me that he would he could have jumped up and caught it at the far blue line, but he let it go. So. No, that's a dream of a lifetime, scoring that goal, I'll tell you much. And I like to say, I don't know if it's true, but I sent technically the real stick to the Hockey Hall of Fame, but I can honestly come clean and that sticks with me.
Yeah, you're not going to give that up. I wouldn't give that up.
Not at all. Exactly. So pretty exciting. So no, yeah. that was a good year, guys. That was like a dream come true.
Yeah. And then the next season just seems to be the pinnacle of everything for us as Blaze fans. 2004, 2005, fond memories for all of us. Good year, that one. What's your memories of it?
Yeah. Well, that's everything. When I was playing in South Carolina, the way I lived, the way, you know, how I was successful there under different circumstances and talent, and then me kind of putting my nose to the grind and actually working out for a few years and getting into shape and becoming a professional, that kind of set the tone. And that's what I work for. You work for in the summer, you work in practice. I prided myself in practice that I worked hard, and then you never take anything for granted. And that's what I got out of it. And that's why I feel I was so much mentally stronger than everyone else, because I, you know, you work out, you're paying the price, you know, even to play in the elite league, I had to pay the price. I wasn't good enough just to put on my pads and be in out of shape, 20 pounds, 10 pounds overweight and think I was going to play. I had to work and I had to prepare myself mentally. So I feel I was more prepared coming in February, March, and April than any other goalie that I played against. And I still to the day think of that because I was mentally stronger. And I think not only that year, the triple was a special year and we were good, but I felt good that year. And those is a year like that. And when I look at Sheffield, my last couple of years in Sheffield, that's what it brought me to the pinnacles of that, from working hard and mentally just kind of being right. So it was, that's a year in itself, that triple, boy. You can't kind of go back on that and look back. I mean, everything was right there. The people were right. The guys were right. The personalities were right. That was just a perfect team, I would like to say.
Yeah, it seemed like a good team. So well knit from the outside. Couple of questions that I've pulled out from that year is Steve Chartrand's testimonial was that year. Tomo had his testimonial that year. And a shock to myself and Ross when we were discussing this a few days ago was you made an appearance as an outskater in those games. And I think you had a penalty shot as well. Was that something you just thought, hey, it's a testimonial, I'm going to do it? Or is it something you allow?
No, I like playing out. I play out right now. I play right wing. I play my off wing so I can like one time off my off wing. So I play on the 40 and overs with the EDAM. It's EDAM. It's where I have my company. Like right now, I live in North Belford, but my shop and business is in EDAM, Saskatchewan. So I play with their local team against the North Battleford guys. And we've lost once in 4 years, maybe five. So I play with some pretty good players that set me up on the back door. So that's fun for me. So I don't put the pads on anymore. I put the pads on once a year and a half ago in a 50 and over game. And they can allow their goalies to be under 50 because their goalies are hard to find.
Yeah.
And it was dead serious game too. And we're playing this team from Meadow Lake and they were like ex like senior players. So they're real serious. And I'm like this 200 at the time I was 235, 240. I'm a little heavier now, but I'm working on that. So, yeah. So I'm playing and I didn't know the game was this serious. I'm playing for a buddy's team And it's like in a tournament. And next thing you know, it's a dead serious game. Like these old 50-year-olds are like body checking each other. And we ended up with, long story short, I had to gut it out. I was breathing pretty heavy that game. But we ended up winning 4-3 in a shootout. And I could not walk for 2 weeks after that game. So that's kind of why I don't play goal anymore. But I like playing out. It's fun. We have a couple beers after games and play with a couple guys. I actually got a pattern made up for me, specifically for me, from a buddy of mine from CCM. So pretty exciting. But that's the fun I get to have around here now.
And that's it. When it's still fun, you can enjoy yourself. That's a good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So obviously that Grand Slam year you had in front of you, and I'm bringing this up because whenever I speak to friends who have played Netminder in Beer League, they say there's five guys in front of me whenever a goal scored, and it's not just their fault. That's the excuse that's always thrown out. So
yeah,
that Grand Slam year, in front of you, D-men-wise, you had Wade and Neil, you had Doug and Pavel, then later Joseph Lukacs, and then obviously James Pease. Does that make your job a lot easier when you've got those five in front of you?
Yeah, well, especially when you got James Pease in front of you. You know what Peasy did his job as much as anybody? He played when he was called upon, Peasy answered the bell. I don't care what anybody says. I love that guy. He's a wonderful human being, and he's a pretty special guy. But yeah, when you got Wade back there. When Wade showed up, Wade kind of set the tone of the team. Everybody grew bigger, stronger, faster, and had a lot more balls, in other words. So Wade was the finishing puzzle. I mean, Marty was our stability. He was our leader, he was kind of the stability back there, right? He could slow things down, calm things down with his energy and his skating ability, and just a solid player. A lot of the opposing players, it was hard for them to keep up with Marty. So, you know, you have those two guys. And then everybody, Doug Schuler. Doug Schuler, I think, was a very underrated player. Doug Schuler was like the toughest D-man to play against. He hit as hard as Belak. Like Schuler was a brick back there. And I loved the guy back there. For me, in front of him, Doug Schuler was just tough, not scared to throw a cross check, and if he had to drop the gloves, he dropped the gloves, and there was no messing around with him. So I like Schuler. You know, he was like an unsung hero too for our team.
Yeah, Doug was probably up there, was probably my second or third D-man from that year. My favorite one. So obviously in that year, we Challenge Cup is won in Cardiff. We then wrap the league up a few weeks later at home to London, and we start the playoff journey. Funny story that I found out today, and I didn't realise this. We draw Sheffield in the semi-finals. That year, we went 2-4 against them. So they were kind of our kryptonite that year. So there was a bit of worry. What was it like going into a semi-final against a team that probably had our number in the league that year?
Don't get me wrong. We were thinking about those losses, I'll tell you that much. So it was, we knew they were deadly, right? And they were experienced because they had these guys like Perron and Dudium. These guys have all won before. And they had some tough guys like Darlene and make it hard for you. But so we knew that. And it was the worst possible draw that we could possibly get. But I don't know. When it's time to play and it means something, you find out what you got. And I think we beat them 2-0, right?
3-0. Yeah.
3-0. So, you know, it was a collective effort. I mean, they played us good too that game. I mean, we just were able to bury the puck. But that shows you the character of our team. We knew we didn't, they had our number. They were going to compete with us. We were so confident that we were going to win and nothing was going to stop us. It didn't matter if it was a team who had our number, it was our time. And I think that was our mindset really going in. So you always have doubt. It's good to have doubt in anything you do, because that's what kind of makes you step back and ground you a little bit to say, geez, you know, guys, these guys have did well against us and had our number. So we have to be even more prepared for this game than, you know, we can't just go in. So I think it prepared us even more going up against Sheffield. So that was a big one for us.
Yeah. And we obviously, like you said, we overcame that. We found that extra determination. Then we move on to the final. Tight knit game, 1-1. Something that we've all found in a video, and if we can share it with you if you'd like. 1-1.
Or I thought you were going to say the 1-0 goal when I let it in from like outside the blue line.
No, not that one.
I'm sure all you guys are aware of that.
Yeah, we recall that one. No, this one is. Because
Tomo certainly makes me aware of it when I see him quite a bit, so or talk to him.
Oh, you can throw this one back at him then. This is a good one. Yeah. So 1-1, couple of seconds left on the clock, and a Panthers player dumps the puck from about in between red line and our blue line. Don't think you were paying as much attention as Tomo would have liked, and I think you make a last minute save just before the buzzer. And camera cuts to Tomo on the bench talking to Luke, and he goes, and I'll say the words, fucking Jody. And he's got this look on his face. Were you aware that he said that?
Yeah, fuck these guys, I tell you. It was fucking an offside, so it didn't mean anything, even if it would have went in.
Fair enough.
So everybody was just all, holy. I'm like, fuck, it would have been an intentional offside. It would have been called down. But I got to watch because those refs were a little dodgy back in the day, too. You never know. But everybody panicked about that, all right.
Yeah, definitely did panic. So after that season, the Grand Slam season, there's a mass exodus of Blaze players. They go off to new things. And there was stories back in the day that you were signing in Denmark. Obviously, we didn't have Twitter. We didn't have social media. You were going to Denmark and then you end up in Sheffield, which is probably a little bit of pill to swallow for Blaze fans because you ended up in our rivals. What story your end?
Well, I think it was money. They just wanted to cut money. They didn't want to pay the next year, Tomo and Andy, from what I understand. I mean, I'm trying to think how much more I went for 100 quid a week more, maybe. So it wasn't, I'm thinking five, not even maybe, somewhere around maybe 100 quid. It wasn't a lot. So I don't even remember. But it wasn't much.
Making the decision, and that was that. But
Tomo was pretty stern that we would just stay because we were Grand Slam champions and be honored or loyal and stuff. But I mean, Rick, I mean, you got 100 quid more a week is a lot. Back in that day was a lot, right? I mean, now it's peanuts for what they're paying nowadays over there. So I think that's what it was around. I'm not even sure. And then I don't know. I think I was promised the under the table money and stuff like that. And I don't even think I got it, to tell you the truth. So, don't get me wrong. I regretted going there for a year or two, you know, a year and a half, probably 2 years. It took me to get over it. Cause I had, you know, like Calder and me were best friends, and it's pretty hard just to leave and you're in a good situation and a comfort. Remember guys, comfort zone situation, you're surrounding, comfortable with your team, and that's how you succeed. If you're comfortable and confident for where you're at, you can succeed. If you're not comfortable, and that's the way I am, I got to be comfortable. I got to know that all the players are buying in, and that's how it was tough for the first few years in Sheffield because we didn't have a direction. We had a lot of guys that were putting in time the first few years, and no one had really bought in. It would, and there was a lot of, with the owner, he was a complete goof, right?
Yep.
And he could give a shit. So, and you have that, and there was so much instability. It was really hard to focus on playing because I was a principal guy. Everything had to be right. Everybody had to buy in. And I struggled those first year and a half. I really struggled there. I didn't enjoy it at all.
well, you walk into a bit of a pressure cooker in Sheffield. Obviously, you've got the Cov Blaze fan base. It's a couple of thousand. You go into Sheffield, who have got 8,000-10,000, and they are a demanding crowd. You turn up in Coventry, your big orange pillows as pads, and you're going to get a little bit of resentment from our fan base. So how did you find coming back into Skydome?
Well, I think I struggled, right? Because you're sitting there playing against your teammates. And for me, it took me a while to warm up. So I struggled for a few years there. I really struggled. Well, Calder had my name for 3 years, but he just struggled. And other than that one final we played him in that year, we beat him. What was that? So I did win something there.
Yeah, the KO Cup 05-06.
Who cares? The Who Cares Cup.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. So we won, 1-0, I think, in a shootout or something like that. So, and then we lost in the final against Newcastle, which I still have nightmares about that year. But there was some bright spots, but a lot of dark spots. So it was tough. I mean, especially coming back to play and where you had all that success, there was a lot of pressure, and I just didn't have the game that year to, you know, put myself over the edge in any of those contests. So that's the way it goes. But it was good because it was a good kind of a learning thing. People forget too, every year you can be successful 1 year and win everything you can win and succeed and do good, and then you can hit rock bottom pretty quick. And that's a part of the game. So every year you kind of got to learn to win every year again, over and over and over again. It just, if you think it's just going to happen, well, you're going to fail. So you got to learn to win. You got to work hard. Your mind's got to be right to be successful every year.
But you've touched on Sheffield being tough in the first couple of years, but you stayed there for 4 years, and then you eventually won 2 playoff championships and a league title. Obviously, the Blaze won 2 league titles before that, which must have been a little bit tough for yourself. But the memories we have of you winning the playoffs is you raced to the Nottingham Panther fans and slammed the glass and really enjoy it. And that's a big moment in the Elite League from years ago.
So does everybody kind of know why I did that? Was there a reason for that?
No, we'd love to know.
Well, I was calling the game with Rick Strachan, I think, the Coventry game. I was just, maybe did an interview or something. Like, I might have been calling it. And that's when you guys got beat like 6-1 or something like by Nottingham. And they were like fist pumping. This is my last year in Sheffield too, you guys. Remember this. And that's how much Coventry meant to me still. They were fist pumping. It was, I think that Mark or Richardson was like, they were like jumping the glass at 5-1 and 4-1 and 6-1 and hot dogging. And I'm like, come on, you guys, like, fucking grow up. Like, who does that? Honestly, and a lot of kids nowadays do it. A lot of leagues do it now, but they were embarrassing. Nottingham was embarrassing for how they acted beating Coventry in the semifinals. You don't see Adam Calder jumping the glass when he scores to make it 5-1. You can barely see him lift his arm when he scores the game winner at 3-2. And even like a guy like Danny Stewart or guys like that or Neil Martin, you got to have a little bit of, I mean, being that they were the league champs for years and years, they have a little bit of respect. So that pissed me off, that semifinal game. And I said, you know what? Fuck it. Something, we win tomorrow, something's going to happen. And that's part of the reason why I did that. And I jumped the glass. And I knew Nottingham didn't like me, so I was going to do it either way. But that had a lot to do with it. That stirred my pot, and there was no way I was going to lose that game. Us as a team were going to lose that game. But I knew we were going to win it. But and I was waiting for that moment, and I have zero regrets. I wish I could have jumped higher, actually.
So, what made you keep going back to Sheffield? Obviously, you had the tough seasons. Was it just the determination from yourself?
Yeah, you know what? Dave Matos, you got to give him credit. He did good with us those last couple of years. and we played a lot like Coventry too. We played a very aggressive trap. We were fast. And then we had a couple solid, we had, our D was solid too. Like with Steve Munn and Bazic, and we were solid back there. And Randy Dagenet, all these guys, we were a rock back there too. So we played a lot. I looked at it, we played a lot like Coventry did when we won the Grand Slam, and maybe a little more aggressive with food, but you know what? I struggled my first few years. I had to do something. It was the right situation. I felt like we were close to getting to where we want to be, and you just kind of, you gotta finish what you started. And I was able to be lucky with the right guys on the team again and be successful. And that, especially, you know, win the playoffs there, against playoff final against you guys in 08, was it? In 08. That was like an icing on the cake for me, right? Because I put up with a lot of shit with Coventry, getting beat lots. So that was a tipping stone. And then I knew going back into the next year, we were able to keep the team together, and the sky was the limit. And we were lights out, because you look how that year in Sheffield played out. And that's one of my best years. I had a good year. I had a great year in Coventry, but I was pretty good, even maybe a little bit better, I think, in Sheffield. But that year folded out where we had to win some big games coming into Coventry, and we beat you guys twice, I think, in January and February. And I think that's what did it. That's what won us the championship.
Yeah, I mean, your last year in Sheffield, you were first team All-Star. You had the best goals against average. You had the best save percentage. You were a champion. You were cup champion, playoff champion. So that was a great year to end in Sheffield. And then...
Yeah.
At the end of that Sheffield career, you did a little stint for GB.
Yeah, that was awesome, actually. I had a great time with the guys. I forgot about that, actually. Jesus. So, again, I got to get to go with a couple of my buddies there, Andy Buxton and Tommel, and a lot of the players. And the GB guys, even though I played against them, they were all awesome. Like Shields, who else was on that team? Danny Meyer, all these guys, they were just a joy to be around. And so it was I was like a rookie, like a little kid in a candy store. And I got pulled one game and they went back to me. I had one pretty okay game with Italy. I wasn't very sharp. Maybe I was hungover or something. I don't know. But it was a great experience, especially, and that was under like a pressure cooker too. We beat Netherlands and then Poland, when beating them in overtime, that was huge for us. Because that was kind of, I looked at that as like the stepping stone for GB though, right? Because that was a big kind of defeat. Us winning, getting, what were we, second there or third? Or what did we get, silver medal there or something? I don't know what it was. Or bronze?
Bronze medal, I believe. Third place bronze medal.
Yeah, and that was a stepping stone, I think. It kind of gave those guys a little belief, and they just got better and better every year. So it was... It was a great experience. I still, you know what, I still got my jersey and a lot of fond memories there. I'd like to get some videos for that too. I don't even know if you can get your hands on that kind of stuff. Interesting. So
definitely interesting, I have to say. And saying about GB, because at the time, Stevie Lyle and Stephen Murphy were the two British netminders at the time, and they're both playing week in, week out, and had quite good careers at the time. And then you've come in and you've took it to that next step. And, well, we've all seen the GB game now. It's improved and improved and improved, and now we're in the top tier.
Yeah.
Moving away from your GB stint, you ended up in Denmark with Aalborg, playing alongside former Blaze Grand Slammer and Neil Martin. Was Denmark a good move for you in the end?
I you know what? I think it was, in a way, because it kind of, I was done, right? I was like 35 years old. I got everything I could possibly get out of myself. Like, I was tapped out mentally. I was done. So I went to Denmark. I thought they signed me for good money. I think it was the highest paid import that year. And so I got lucky with the deal. So I was, because that's right when it crashed. I signed and then it started crashing. And I was able to make good money that year. And But at Christmas time, I had a job back at home, and I was done. I had my mentally, especially because there they were practicing twice a day, and you were in the gym two or three times a week, and my body just couldn't handle it. And I just so we did make it to the finals though, when we lost four straight to Sondernewski or whatever you call it. I mean, and that's all I had in the tank, man. Like I had some rough patches like any goalie does, and I had some real good patches there, but I just couldn't keep it together consistently. And I had some big games in the playoffs when we needed to win them. I won them, but we come up to those guys in the final and they were just that much better of a team than us. And I was done. I was packed in and I was ready. And I had no regrets quitting when I did.
So you finally hung your skates up, finishing your hockey career in 2011, 2012, playing for the Lloydminster Border Kings in the Chinook Hockey League. What made you decide that this was the right time to hang them up? Was it just that you, like you say, your body just said that's enough?
You know what? I tried to play senior for 2 years, and I played for 2 years, and it was a lot of travel, and I hated it. I was either Vladislav Trechak, or I was like basically the worst goalie in the league. And I didn't enjoy it. They paid me good money to do it, and that's kind of maybe why I did it. But I played 2 years. We went through the Allen Cup. I didn't even play. And I was done at 37. I was tapped out, and that was it. I didn't. So in a way, I wish I didn't play, but I did, and that was that. So, you know, a lot of guys are hungry. When you play pro for 14 years or whatever it is, junior, you know, I left home at 15, and I got back home at 36, so 21 years. And then I go play senior. Like, I'm not hungry like anybody else, to tell you the truth. So it was kind of an eye-opener. I wish I didn't do it in a way, but it is what it is. So,
I mean, you've had a great hockey career. You've won trophies. You've won Grand Slams. You've even scored a goal as well. So, you know, you've had a great career over.
Yeah, I had nothing to prove. I had nothing to prove playing senior, so. It was all good. I was done. I was tapped. I had to become a dad. And I had to, you know, you get to work in the real world. Everybody forgets. If you do that for a long time, then you got to work in the real world. So that's another game in itself.
So talking about the real world, what's happening in the life of Jody Layman right now then?
Well, Jody Layman is, and my wife, I better mention her name because she'll get pissed off. But I bought a vac truck. I don't know if you guys know what vac trucks are. You guys can go, you check my webpage out. It's, you can go on like info or www.trigenergy.ca. TRIG and then energy.ca. I think it's .ca. And you can pull that up, and that shows you kind of what I do. So I'm in the oil business. So when you think of, like, our prime minister, who's against oil, likes all the green stuff, and the whole Biden and all that stuff, I'm kind of against that, and I'm not scared to say it or embarrassed to say it. So what I do is I'm in the oil business, and I got back trucks. We do lots of cleaning. We clean up all facilities, oil facilities. And I've got a safety company that complements this company. And we do tons of like safety, confined space safety. We do like high angle rescue safety from above. We do like breathing air. So I got these air trailers where guys work in the oil, and there's lots of H2S. It's gas, like toxic gases. And they got to be masked up, and they do work under air. So if you check my website out there, you'll see kind of what I do. So I got about, this company, we've got about 25 employees. So I got 25 people working under me for this company. And then me and my wife with my brother, we bought a pipeline company. So I got an additional company we just bought. So I don't know, I've just been pretty lucky, and especially these tough times, to be successful, make the right choices. I did actually, I jumped on a vac truck. If you guys look on there, I drove one of those things for in when the economy crashed. It crashed in 2012. I ordered a truck and I jumped on it, and the economy, the oil crashed. And so I'm sitting with three kids at home, and I bought this truck and there's no work. And I just kind of put my nose to the grind, and I just found work, got lucky. I knew the right people. And you know how I knew the right people? Was through hockey. So everybody kind of knew me because I was a hockey player, and they're like, holy shit, you're driving a fucking back truck? What are you, crazy? And I just put my nose to the ground, you guys. There were days I'd work 60 days straight. I would work, I don't know, I'd have maybe 20 days off a year, and just worked my ass off and got lucky, knew the right people, bought another truck, and then kept going, bought a couple air trailers for safety at the same time, then got busy and got lucky. All these plants right where I'm from in North Belford, they started putting up these steam injection facilities that inject steam into the ground, and they heat the oil up so it's easier to bring it out of the ground. So I just was lucky and bought another truck. So I got three. So next thing you know, here I am. I got 14 trucks, and I got 11 breathing air trailers. And we're going pretty good still. It's a little bit slow right now because of COVID the last few weeks, but it hasn't really stopped us. So that's what I do now. And babysit people. I've got some real good employees that help my company. And you kind of run it like a hockey team, really, if you want to be successful. And I've been fortunate that way. So I've got this oil field company that's been doing really good. And I just bought a pipeline company, and we do water and sewer. We put water and sewer in cities and towns. And so I'm pretty excited about that because it's away from the oil patch. It's more to do with city and the oil patch is very, you know, really risky to some regard, but so I was able to add this into the portfolio. So yeah, it's going good. I can't complain. A lot of stress, but what would a guy do without stress, right?
Definitely. Stress is meaning you're doing something right, because it means you're working in the right direction. That's what I always say.
Yeah, no, exactly, guys. So I had a podcast 6 months ago. And what was the guy's name again? Sean Newman podcast. And I talk about my business on there and my hockey career as well. If you guys ever get a chance, it was a good 2-hour podcast. It was pretty cool. It turned out really good. So if you're bored one day, there's some good guys on there too, you guys. There's some good, like, minor pro guys. And they've got everybody. Pretty cool.
Wow. I'll give that a listen to tomorrow when I'm a bit bored for 2 hours.
Yeah.
But something to do.
No, I'm pretty honored though for you guys to have me here, man. That's pretty exciting. It's always nice to go back to. I got to bring my kids and family back there pretty soon, boy. Once this storm hopefully calms down a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've had a couple of ex Grand Slam guys on. We've had Neil Martin on recently, Chris McNamara as well.
Yeah.
They've mentioned returning for a stint just to kind of see the city and everybody again.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have everybody come back at the same time, really.
Yeah.
I know we talked about it. We had a Zoom call there this summer. Wow. And we talked about it. So I'm sure we'll make it happen one day or another.
Well, once COVID's out of the way, I've got a lot of contacts now from doing this podcast. So I'll reach out to everybody.
Well, that's good. Yeah, no, I'm going to have to check this out too. So you got to send me the links for this and stuff. So
yeah, definitely will do. Coming to the end of everything now for you, Jody. We've asked all previous guests this, and it's kind of like our thing. Who would be your top six that you've played alongside? So this has to be one netminder, two D-men, and three forwards.
Okay, so one netminder that
I played along that I liked.
Yeah.
So would it have to be on my team? One netminder.
Yeah.
Yeah. One netminder. Well, you're going to say for left winger would be Adam Calder, right?
Thought that would be there.
Yeah. You got it. And then Ashley Tate for center. Would he be a center or right winger? He's a righty, right?
He's a right-hander, yeah.
but he's a wing. Was he a right wing or a center?
He was. I remember Grand Slam year. He was a right wing because we had Poivre on the left side, yep, of him and Chris McNamara running down the middle.
Yeah, so you gotta say, I gotta say Ashley, because I've been to the war and back with that guy. So I just think the world of Ashley Tate. I'm surprised I never mentioned his name. Like, I love that guy, man. Ashley was his own person, and that's what made him unique. So he was lights out. He was lights out. So you go Ashley and Adam, and then I'd have to put Steve Munn on the back end. And then I'd have to put Bielak, and this is for England, you guys. Bielak and Martin.
Wow.
As a tie. I mean, that, if we're talking UK, like, I could put Jared Bednar down from, he was lights out D-man in South Carolina. But, and then Netminder to play against, who was a winner, I'd have to say, you know what, Koning was good. You know what? You got to give him credit. He was a solid guy. He won games. He was a winner. So he was a solid guy. I can't complain. Then my backup there for a few years, Dan Green. He was a pretty good kid too.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the kid. So.
Wow.
And then I'm missing a centerman, you guys. Centerman. Well, Fleury was pretty good when he was in the league too, eh?
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to think, but you guys got me here. This is centerman. There was Dan Carlson. We played with Danny. Was good. Oh, I forget his name now. In Sheffield. Can't think of his name. Jesus. I should check. But centerman. You're going to give me shit for not. What year was that? 2000. Eight.
Wasn't Jeff Le Guy, was it?
Jeff Le Guy, yeah. Le Guy was good. I'm trying to think whatever the centermans were in the league that I liked. For guys that I played with, Le Guy, Carlson was solid. Let's not kid ourselves. Carlson was lights out too. He was such a prick to play against, man. he was legit too. You know? We had Finnerty too. Everybody forgets about Finnerty. Finnerty was like, you know, not like a natural goal scorer, and he knows that too. So if he tells you anything different, I'll call him on it. But Finner was lights out in the big games, boy, and he'd get under guys' skin. He was, Finner was, he's a special guy. He's a good friend of mine too, Finner. So those are three pretty good guys. For the guys that I played with, those were lights out. Steve Munn, everybody knows what he was like. Pretty hard to find a D-man like that.
Mm.
And then Bielak, Martin, they kind of speak for themselves. Bielak, just because Bielak, you know what Bielak, we all know what kind of player he was and stuff, but what he brought that year, it was like he was a finishing puzzle to like a Cinderella, not even a Cinderella story, but just cap the great story of the year, right? For everything what happened, the fights, the brawls, how good he was with the English kids. It was just like a pretty special is what it was. And I think a lot of guys can attest to that too. And he kind of was the icing on the cake, in other words. So, yeah. That's pretty much.
Good set of players you've picked there. I can see why you would struggle to put a lineup together on that. But that's all the questions I have for you this evening, Jody. I'm going to go around the other guys now just to see if they've got anything that's cropped up. So, Ross, have we got any more from you?
Just one question for you, Jody. Have you got any funny stories of your time in Coventry?
Funny stories. I don't know. What would be funny? I remember writing my third exam in my second year, and PZ always laughed at me. I wasn't a very smart kid. I could study for an exam for a week straight and forget it all in the day. And my third exam, I got to it and I blacked out. I looked at the teacher, I gave her the exam and told her I was done. And I quit school right there.
Oh, Wow.
There you go. So I walked away. I hated university. I wasn't, maybe because I'm kind of dyslexic in a way, but no, it wasn't for me at all.
No, I can relate to that. I've been in many classes when I was in school and just thought, no, I'm not dealing with this. Just walked out.
No, if it's not meant to be, I say there, you know what? There's a lot of other things in life you can succeed at too, right?
Yeah, so, definitely.
It's the way it is. So.
Scott, have we got any more questions from yourself? Nothing from Scott. And Ash, any more from yourself?
No, nothing more from me, thank you.
No problem. So on that note, thank you, Jody, for taking your time out and speaking to us during this episode. So just for the listeners, that's it for this week's episode of the Third Period Podcast. Hopefully we'll be back in an ice rink shortly and watching some sort of hockey in the new season. Hope everybody stays safe and see you all soon.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks again for listening to the Third Period of Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to check out Willie's Ice Hockey Emporium for all your ice hockey needs.